In this episode of the I Can't See You podcast, I'll talk about a walk that Liz, Jane, and I took through my old neighborhood and some memories that it brought up. I'll also touch on how some blind folks are being discriminated against during the pandemic while trying to get something to eat.
From Studio C, welcome to the I Can't See You podcast with David. He can't see, but he's got a lot to say and a face for radio.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 70 of the I Can't See You podcast. My name is David, at David Benj on all the socials, so please do check me out over on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. And remember, the podcast is available on YouTube, and for now, no video, it's just the audio portion. And give it a try. I do hope to have some videos up, both of the podcast and some other things. I practiced the other day when Liz and Jane and I went out for a walk, and I'll get into that in a couple of minutes. I really do appreciate you joining me for today's episode. And as much as I hate continually hearing about it on TV and on the news, today's episode is really kind of going to be based on the pandemic of the COVID-19 virus. And it's just something that I get tired of hearing about, and I swore that I wouldn't talk about it too much on the podcast, but here we are, and I'm going to talk about how things were on Easter. For those of you who don't know me, I am Jewish. Liz is Catholic. Our kids are both or neither, depending on depending on the season. And so we tend to celebrate, you know, we do Hanukkah as well as Christmas. Passover, not so much, although we do have matzah here, and I have been eating some matzah. Not that I have ever followed the no-breaded Passover, even when I was growing up. My parents we just didn't do it. I remember going to Phillies games with some friends who did follow it, and I remember eating a hot dog on a nice roll and then having a soft pretzel. And they were just staring at us eating the peanuts, the only thing that they could really have there at the time. You know, back in the day, you didn't have the food options, obviously, that you have today. So our kids were kind of introduced to both things. This year, being a little bit different, we didn't get together with anybody for Easter. But we did, because we live close to Liz's mother. We took a walk. And so after we had our Easter dinner, which no part of it at all was kosher, I don't think. You know, we had ham, which of course isn't kosher on any day of the week and to folks that keep kosher. And we had biscuits that Liz made fresh from scratch, which were also very good. And a couple other things. And, you know, maybe the other things were kosher, maybe not. Again, I never was kosher at any kind of thing. And neither were my parents, for that matter. So after we finished our Easter dinner, which was usually for holidays, we tend to eat early. It was a good time to eat this year because we kind of spread it out, as I mentioned in the last episode, you know, watching a little bit what I eat. Having Easter dinner at 2 p.m. worked out because I only had a little snack beforehand so I could take some medicine. And you know, and then we had our cheesecake for dessert after we got back from our walk. But Liz's mother only lives about a mile away. So we walked over to her place. And, you know, as I've mentioned, if you're friends with me on Facebook, you've seen the video, walked over to her place and then walked around where I grew up, the neighborhood that I grew up in, which is also not too far away. Ironically, not too far from where Liz grew up. Although we weren't friendly as kids, we didn't know of each other. I went to school with her sister, Margaret, who is a few years older than her and 28 days older than me. There's a funny story there. When our kids were little, Margaret's birthday is, like I said, 28 days before mine. I would tell my kids that, Aunt Margaret is much older than I am, you know, so, you know, make sure you treat her nicely because she is so much older and, you know, you really should show her respect and everything like that. So my kids grew up and I never imagined that, even though they knew it was only 28 days, that for whatever reason, because I kept saying that she was much older, they, you know, it just stuck. And it kind of made me feel how things happen, you know, when somebody keeps repeating true or not in the news media, you know, a certain something, and it just gets repeated so many times, everybody just assumes it's true. So that was funny. So we walked over to Liz's mom's, and like I said, we waved through the glass. One of the things that makes me a little nervous, and it would be nice to walk over there more, but the road from where we live, and we live just over, we live right next to I-476, which in the Philadelphia area, it's called the Blue Route. Back in the day when they were drawing up the plans for this Interstate 476 that connects Interstate 95 to the Pennsylvania Turnpike and I-76, there were three lines, a red one, a blue one, and a yellow one, and they picked the Blue Route, and hence its name. It's actually got an official name, some sort of memorial highway. Nobody around here even knows that. So folks around here call it the Blue Route or 476. So once you cross over, as you walk out of our condo building and you walk over, there's a sidewalk that takes you from technically Springfield into Wallingford. The sidewalk stops. There's a bike shop and a gas station, and then the sidewalk stops. So the only place to walk along Route 320 where we live is a shoulder and a bike path that's next to the road. And in some spots, it's not very wide. And in some spots, there's, you know, tree branches overhanging and whatnot. So for me to walk it on my own, I would be very uncomfortable. But, you know, with Liz and Jane, it was a little easier. And the odd thing was, for me at least, and it wasn't odd, it's just unusual now because I've kind of relied on my cane. I don't know if I've relied on it as because it's, you know, I feel more secure with it. But Liz said, "Do you really want to carry that with you? I'm going to be there. You know, I'll make sure you're good," and so forth and so on. And again, as I've mentioned over the last several episodes, my hands have just been, you know, pretty swollen over the last, you know, month or so. And it's just, you know, to not have to carry something, it's that much easier. So, you know, when I needed it, Liz would, you know, hold me at the elbow and, you know, kind of guide me if I needed to around a grate that, you know, a storm drain you know, branches or fallen branches or debris in the road or the sidewalk. But we walked over to Liz's mom's and it didn't take us long. And the other hairy thing is crossing the road. And again, with Liz and Jane, they could look and tell me if it was safe. There's not a great way to cross because the intersection that is near Liz's mother's house, it's kind of like island hopping. You have to go from the side of the road to one island, then from that island to another island, and then from that island to the other side of the road. And there's not really a crosswalk for that last bit. So we actually had crossed 320 earlier, further down before we got to that intersection. So we only had to get to two islands as opposed to three. And again, that last one, we had to wait to make sure it was clear because there's this one lane of traffic. It just keeps coming. And again, because nobody was really out and about, it wasn't too critical. Again, wouldn't feel safe on my own doing it because there's no way for me to time with the lights. I, you know, when one light is red and one light is green, yes, but this one lane doesn't have any kind of stop. There's a yield sign further down, but it's kind of like a way for them to just keep going in this, you know, going from 252 south onto 320 or where 320 and 252 merge. I'm not sure which one survives. I guess it's 252 survives. You know, it would be difficult for me and I just would be uncomfortable. It's not like when you're in a city and you've got, you know, there's an intersection and when one way is red, the other way is green and you could figure it out even if you have to stay there for a couple of minutes. So we did that and we went over and obviously we didn't spend much time there. We peered in the window. Liz went first and then waved to her mom. Then I waved to her mom and of course I couldn't see her. So, you know, I'm guessing she waved back and then Jane went up to the window and waved and, she came a little closer to the window and Liz said something to her. And then we left and then we decided that, and I had said this on the way over that I wanted to walk around our old neighborhood and, I hadn't lived in the old neighborhood for quite a while. I guess I moved out in, I want to say 1988 or thereabouts. So it's been a little while. It was a few years after I opened the West Coast Video Store, but it was a great place to grow up. The area was called, or still is called, Sproul Estates. It's in Wallingford, Pennsylvania, and it was a great place to walk around the development. It was a great place to ride a bike around the development. Because there really wasn't any kind of through traffic. The road that we came in on kind of was a through road going from 252 heading towards another fairly major road. But for the most part, that was the only road that had any kind of traffic on it. Most of the other, roads in the development, they weren't that heavily traveled because it wasn't like a throughway. To go from one place to another. Most folks were either visiting somebody there or they lived there. So, during the days, I used to love to ride my bike and I would map out, doing this road and this road was X number of miles, doing this road and this road was, Y number of miles. So I knew I could do 10 miles if I did three laps of this and added, these other two streets. So it was always a fun development to grow up in. Because of that, because we could do that, there was a ball field not too far from my house. There was a tennis court, which has since been replaced by a playground. The cool thing about the tennis court was in the winter, they would take down the netting and we would play street hockey in there. And if anybody's ever played street hockey, the worst part about street hockey was when you shot wide or the goalie made the save and it went flying, into the yard or down the storm drain or wherever. So it was great because the tennis court had the, really high fence, I want to say 10 or 15 feet high. So for the most part, when you missed a shot, it went into the fence and you could, if it was a hard shot, it wouldn't get stuck in there and you could just pull it out. If it wasn't, it bounced off like you were playing, like it was bouncing off the glass in an ice hockey game. So it was a great development to grow up in. And I decided to shoot some video, like I said. So, head over to Facebook and either follow me or friend me again at David Benj. So facebook.com/David Benj. And you can have a look at that video. And they were, nothing fancy. The houses were split levels and, everybody added a little bit of this and a little bit of that. My parents added a room for me. So it turned the three bedroom into a four bedroom. And it ended up when they added the bedroom for me, they also added a full bath. It was I guess they call it three quarter bath because it had a shower, not a tub. But it was nice. It was nice. It was, I spent around 10 years in that room after, I was in a tiny room, the smallest room of the house, because my parents always wanted to leave the larger room for a guest room. So for the first, 15 years of my life, I was in a little tiny room and then, we added on and I'm sure that room that was built for me is now probably the master, again, because it was on its own floor and it was a nice room. I liked it. And, I think my folks enjoyed, having that there. Even after I moved out and they were there another 6 or 7 years, they stayed, they didn't move up there. I'm guessing they just left it empty. I mean, it was a pretty big house for them to be in by themselves. But like I said, they moved out after 6 or 7 years. So I shot some video around the old development and it was just, it was just a nice day. I don't know where you live, if you had a nice sunny day, but it was very, very nice that day. So it was a nice walk. And when I posted the video on Facebook, and I did a little bit of commentary about how things were when we grew up, and this is when we did this, and this is where we did that, and so lived here. And it just started to make me think about how things were so different back then. Which after we came back from the walk and I thought about it more, I thought, how much different are things going to be after everything settles down with the virus and everything's closed down and just so many questions about what's going to happen. One of the biggest things that I thought about on the walk, when I grew up in that house, I didn't have much to worry about. My parents, took care of everything and I didn't have to, I had to go to school and, on the weekends and whatnot, I would either play with my friends or try to do sports with my friends or do whatever. And, you know, and obviously as you grow up and you start, you have more responsibilities and so forth and so on. And then, you know, and then I moved out and then I had all sorts of responsibilities because, you know, I owned a business when I moved out. And and how different, you know, it just brought back so many memories and made me think of what if I owned that video store today. Obviously, you know, nobody's renting videos at a store anymore because you can get them through your TV or through your streaming or whatever. So, but what if you had that small business today and you're now closed for a month? How do you survive? How do you come out of that? How do you, you know, and then I started to think, well, what if my dad were in business today? I heard on the news today that, you know, retail earnings were down, I want to say it was 9 or 10% overall. And then they listed, you know, auto dealers' business was down like 25%, and clothing retailers were down a big chunk. Then they got to supermarkets, and supermarkets were up 26%. And of course, because they're the only name, the only game in town now. So how would that have affected, you know, my dad's places when, you know, and he never owned any store for a long amount of time. He owned a store in Brookhaven for probably about, I don't know, 6 years, maybe not even 6 years. But that was probably the longest one that he had, that one, or there was one in Chester. And these were, compared to today's markets, these were fairly small stores. The one in Brookhaven, I want to say, was maybe 20,000 square feet. The one in Chester was probably about 17,000 square feet, you know, which, of course, in today's stores, I mean, you know, usually you don't see them less than, like, you know, 40,000 square feet or so. And in our area, the big stores are Acme and Giant, and you know, Wegmans has a few stores in this area, and those stores are huge. The other difference is, of course, you don't just get your groceries now from a supermarket. You get them from Target, and you get them from Walmart, and you get them from, you know, you you get them in bulk. You get stuff in bulk, like my mom used to do. And every time we run short of something, I always think about how my mom wanted cases of things at home. And my dad always made fun of her. What do you think? You're not going to be able to go and get it? And again, my dad owned supermarkets. So he was literally going to the supermarket every day, even on Sundays. So, you know, if we didn't have something at home, he could just bring it home when he came home. So it just made me think of all that. And how would I handle a business now? And how do you survive? And the other thing I was thinking about, which was brought to my attention from some emails from the National Federation of the Blind, a lot of restaurants and banks, I guess, too, were only using their drive-through, or you can only drive up and pick up stuff, especially, and I'm guessing with the restaurants, I'm guessing they're talking about fast food. Well, as I found out when I was a kid down at the University of Miami for that hot minute, my friend Pat and I, and I was thinking about this recently when all these emails were going back and forth because Pat's birthday was a couple of weeks ago, and we've been exchanging some emails. We had tried to go to a bank once, and I don't remember if the lobby was closed and just the drive-through was open. I don't, you know, listen, it was, you know, 1982, so it wasn't yesterday. So we had gone through and we tried to use the drive-through, and I don't remember if the teller finally let us do it. And I don't remember if it was Pat or I who was doing the banking. It doesn't matter. But they said, the next time you come through, you got to have wheels. And I said, a bike? And they said, yes. I said, roller skates? I don't remember the answer to that, but they needed you to have wheels. And that's basically what the NFB was saying in their email from a couple of weeks ago, that blind folks, who obviously are not doing anything on wheels, were being denied service at banks that only have the drive-through open, and at restaurants that only have a drive-through open, because you couldn't walk up and make an order. And I know here in Pennsylvania, other restaurants were only allowed to do takeaway as well, to the point where at first it was you could walk in and pick up the stuff, but then even after that, they made it so you had to pick up your orders outside of the store. I don't even think you could go in. You had to order, and then they would bring it out to you. And so when I read those emails, I thought back to that time that my friend Pat and I had used, tried to use the drive-through or use the drive-through to make a deposit or get money out. And again, I don't remember what the transaction was, but I started thinking about that. So a blind person wants Chick-fil-A. Everybody wants Chick-fil-A. And of course, the day you want Chick-fil-A most is Sunday, but that's another story. You know, if you're blind and you want to go, you live near a Chick-fil-A because now you really can't even take, in this area at least, you really can't even take public transit to go places because it's, you know, it's for folks who are essential workers. And, you know, I think they call it Lifeline or something like that. Chick-fil-A, I'm pretty sure doesn't qualify as Lifeline. Maybe going to the supermarket does, but Chick-fil-A, I don't think so. And just a side note, the lines as we drive by the Chick-fil-A, you know, going to drop off our tax forms at our accountant, and the lines at the one in Springfield on Baltimore Pike here, it is just crazy how long they are there as folks, you know, queue up for deliciousness and clogged arteries. So I started thinking, well, how does that work? And so Liz and I started talking about it, and she says, well, you can't blame them. They can't do it. They have to have an exception. I said, okay, well, what if they stopped allowing Jews to go up to, you know, pick up stuff at the drive-thru window, or Black folks, or Asian folks, or some other minority? How is it different? Why is it okay to say, hey, that blind guy can't come through because he's not in a car or on a motorcycle? Obviously, he's not going to be in a car. And again, you don't want to, you know, unless a blind person in this area lives in a city or a town where they could walk somewhere, they're not really going anywhere unless they want to chance it and use a ride share. So I don't know, you know, and I don't know the answer. I mean, I understand, you know, I certainly understand what, you know, what the places are doing, but why is it okay that they can not allow certain people to go through? And I just, you know, they've got to come up with something because again, and it's not the first time during this whole episode. And I don't know what ended up being in the stimulus bill, but I know they were allowing, there was a provision that was brought up in the stimulus bill that would allow school districts to not have stuff accessible to blind students. How is that okay? And I don't know it's not. And there should be a way. I mean, again, if you did it to a specific race or a specific religion, it would be outrageous. But why is it okay that a blind kid, a blind student, you know, can't get what he needs or she needs to do the same at-home learning that everybody else has done? And, you know, I don't know what the fix is for that. And to me, it's troubling, again, because you're not going to say, you know, okay, you know, Jews can't come to the Chick-fil-A drive-thru. You can't do that. You just can't. But why would it be okay that you can't, you know, blind folks can't come to the Chick-fil-A drive-thru or can't buy something from our restaurant? You know, you've got to make, you know, just like they do for everything else, just like they do the curb cuts for folks in wheelchairs. And, you know, they have to make it accessible to everyone. And if everyone can't have it, then no one should be able to have it. I mean, why would it be fair? And it started to make me think about blind folks in general, listening to a few other podcasts. You know, what if you're a blind person and you live by yourself and you don't live in a city or town that you can get places just by foot? So how do you get places? Again, because, you know, I know, again, you know, in this area, public transport is not something you could really take unless it's an emergency obviously if you have an emergency, you can call a ride share, or if it's a real emergency, you know, like a medical emergency, obviously, you could call 911 and go via ambulance. But how do you survive if you're a blind person living by yourself to get out and about? And that's the other thing, getting out and about, you know, since everything started, I've only been into a store a couple of times. I may have mentioned it a few weeks ago. Early on, Liz and I had gone into a supermarket. We went into a Giant, and we were at the deli counter, and in this market, you couldn't go up and say, hey, give me a quarter pound of this and give me a half a pound of that or whatnot. Basically, they had everything out of the front case, and you had to go to a self-serve case where they had pre-sliced things. And they were sliced from those things that are usually in the deli case. So it's not like something that was blister packed and just, you know, something that they normally carry. It was, you know, Jacob likes tavern ham, so we were looking for tavern ham, and Liz found a package of that was, you know, there and they, you know, had been sliced whenever, either that day or the day before. You know, so it was very different. But while we were standing there and Liz was looking, I was a couple of feet away from her. Another customer came up and cuts right between us. And there was probably only about 4 or 5 feet between Liz and I, because I was standing with the cart. And this guy just comes up and he gets, you know, he goes right between us and then is standing right next to me, you know, further away from Liz, but standing next to me. And I'm like, hey, buddy, you know, you haven't heard the news, 6 feet. I mean, you know, say, excuse me. You know, obviously, I was not as close to the case as Liz was, because Liz was right up at it looking for something. And I don't know what this guy was looking for, if he was looking in the same case. But, you know, that kind of irritated me. And that may have been the last time I've been in the store, you know, other than maybe another time I had gone into Target when we were picking Jacob up. Jacob has continued to work and has been getting some decent hours, which is great. But, you know, someone at a store, you know, has coronavirus, so, you know, they can't give you any information on it. So it's just a little hairy for me. Because again, one thing is, you know, when I get to a shelf, I start to feel everything, and I don't want to start to touch everything because I don't know what's on it and whatnot. So for the most part, when we go somewhere, I sit in the car, and you know, so it's just been, and that's been it. So it was nice to get out for that walk the other day. It just made me think of a lot of things, and, you know, businesses have been on my mind since everything started. You know, I was talking with my good friend, Alex, my best friend, Alex, you know, we were talking about it. How do you survive? How, you know, look, when I had the video store, my parents owned the property that it was on. So if things were short one month, if we weren't having a great month and, or there was a repair that needed to be done or something like that, I would say, hey, you know, mom and dad, you know, okay if I don't pay this month? And of course it would be okay. But you know, I'm pretty sure most landlords are not going to say, oh yeah, it's fine. So I don't know. I'm just glad that, you know, I don't have a retail business or any kind of business that is dependent on, you know, foot traffic for folks coming in. You know, we do still have digital graphics design and do web hosting and graphic and web design. Of course, I don't do the design anymore. And unless it's a basic fix, I can do a basic update or whatnot. But, you know, now with WordPress, most of our clients that are still with us on that side, you know, they can do it as well. We've kind of transitioned digital graphics more into a marketing company that, you know, doing affiliate marketing and whatnot. And I mean, you know, if you're not sure what affiliate marketing is, affiliate marketing is where you have a link to a site that, for example, like I do with Amazon, if you go to icantseeyou.com/Amazon, that'll take you to Amazon. And if you make a purchase, if it's, you know, most of the things that they have there that they sell, I would get a commission. Obviously, if you buy a gift card, I don't get anything. But if you buy a grill or some soap or, you know, what's everybody looking for now, toilet paper, if you buy that, yeah, I'll get a little commission. Sometimes it's, you know, a percent or two, and sometimes it's a little bit more. In fact, Amazon has just changed their affiliate marketing, and a lot of folks, or their commission schedule, where a lot of things have been chopped, some in half, some things that used to be 8% are now 3%. So a lot of things have been cut. So a lot of folks are mad about that, but that's what affiliate marketing is. And that's what I'm trying to concentrate on, because it's something where, with digital graphics, when we were doing websites, you know, more frequently and not just, you know, fixing people's sites or updating them, the biggest issue that we had wasn't doing the work. It was getting the content from our customers. So, you know, we might start and be ready to add the content, and then the customer, you know, would, you know, it wasn't ready or they were working on it, and it could drag on for months. And what that meant, that would mean we couldn't get the other half of the, of our contract, because they weren't sending us the, you know, the content. So, and maybe that's why they weren't sending us the content, because, you know, they would, you know, want to delay having to pay us, you know, because the second 50% of the project wasn't due until the site was complete, and we couldn't complete the site unless we had all the content. And towards the end of when, and even now, if somebody were to call me up and say, hey, I want to do a website, and we come to an agreement on a price, it would still be 50% up front and then 50% on the back end, but we would cap that time frame on the back end. It would be a specific number of months that, you know, it would be on due, you know, the last payment would be due, whichever came first, the site being completed, or a specific amount of time, and probably 90 days for most of the size projects we do. It's, you know, we don't do huge projects that take months and months and months. Usually most of the projects that we did could, you know, maybe take a month to 6 weeks, if we had all the content. So yeah, I just can't imagine how a business, if you've got a business, and, you know, I'd really love to hear from you and find out how, what your plan is on surviving, and how you can, especially a retail business, because most retail businesses here in Pennsylvania, unless you're a grocery store or bodega, and I'm not sure you can call them a bodega here, I guess that's more a New York thing, but, you know, convenience store that sells food and sandwiches and whatnot, you know, for the most part, you're not open. So how do you survive? You're now 6 weeks in to having to be shut. How do you survive? How do you pay the rent? How do you, you know, you're certainly not paying your employees. You've probably laid them off. So how do you survive? And I'd really love to hear from you. A couple ways to get in touch with me, 646-926-6350. If you have a business, let me know. You could also email me, icantseeyoupodcast@gmail.com. Remember, I can't see you sounds like a whole sentence, but it's only seven letters. icantseeyoupodcast@gmail.com. Let me know. And let me know what, if you don't have a business, let me know what you're doing to both stay active and pass the time. I know I saw some report today where folks are streaming like 8 hours worth of TV, and that is a lot. I know our DVR is running a little bare, because there haven't been a lot of new shows on that we watch, and we've been watching some of the other ones and that are on there. So we've done one episode of Tiger King. I don't know if you've watched that, but Jane wants to finish that. I just didn't really like it. And again, there's not a lot for me to see. You know, there's a lot of times where, you know, they're just showing the tigers and whatever else is going on. It's just, it just wasn't enjoyable for me. And we might pick it up. And I know we did check the other day, Jane and I checked, it is described. So maybe I'll watch it and rewatch it without everybody, just so I can hear what's going on in it and kind of understand. So many people are talking about it though. It's kind of funny. But let me know what you're doing. I know Jane's got, she bought a Nintendo Switch, so that's kind of taken the pressure off us to play board games most nights. Like I said, I really enjoyed the walk the other day, so on nice days, hopefully we'll get out for more walks. You know, it's kind of funny. Jane was telling me today, you know, she usually doesn't get to work until about 7 after 9 or 10 after 9 now, you know, and that's, of course, waking up at 8:45. The commute is about 25 steps from her bedroom to where she's working. But today she worked until 6:30, and, you know, she's probably been working as much or more, Even when she's doing lunch, she's still working. She doesn't even take a break. You know, she makes lunch, she takes a break while she's making it. And same thing with Liz. You know, Liz is, as I mentioned, a preschool teacher. So now there's almost a set schedule every morning. They have a whole class Zoom call. I think it's Zoom. And, you know, they do some things with the kids, and then they do individual things with all the other kids, you know, throughout the day. And, you know, she was prepared. Last week was spring break. They had meetings and stuff during the week when they, Governor of Pennsylvania Tom Wolf said, you know, schools won't reopen until September. So they had kind of a couple days of emergency meetings. How are we going to do this? What are we going to do? And she's been doing as much prep work and as much work after hours, scanning things so she could send them out. You know, I've been helping her with a few things IT related. Liz is not very IT savvy, and it's kind of funny. Jane's been helping her. So it's just been a very interesting time. So doing anything during the week, even still, you know, obviously their commutes are a lot better, but you know, they're spending more time, you know, Liz especially, more time with prep work and, you know, recording videos. You know, she's been reading a book. I guess it's been a chapter each day. She was doing Flat Stanley. I think she's on to something else now. I'm not 100% on that because I try not to wake up too early because, you know, she's got that going on. Sometimes she's got that and Jane's got, you know, meetings with either clients or internal meetings, and they're both via Zoom. So I don't want to be on the computer sucking some more bandwidth away. So it's just very interesting how things were different. And it just really came out during our walk the other day, you know, thinking back to when I was a kid and what I did, you know, during the day and then walking around the development where I grew up and then, you know, how things were, you know, 6 months ago with Liz going to work and Jane up in New York, you know, on her commute to work, you know, as she told me tonight, you know, it's going to be hard once everything starts to reopen and she's got to jump on the subway and her commute is, you know, roughly 20 minutes to a half an hour, depending on how busy things are. It's a lot different. You know, now she gets up, like I said, you know, 8:45 and she's at the desk at, you know, between 9:05 and 9:10. You know, you can't beat that. So, you know, she saves, about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes in commuting by working here. I know it's probably better, and socially it's better if you're obviously with people. I guess just not when there's a very contagious virus going around. But I really would love to hear from you. However you're working from home, however you're, you know, dealing with it, if you're a small business, please reach out. And I really do appreciate you listening to this episode, episode 70 of the I Can't See You podcast. Reach out to me on social media as well, at David Benj on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. And you can certainly comment on the episodes on YouTube. You can comment there. And I hope you're staying safe. I hope you're washing your hands. And I really do appreciate listening to episode 70. Stay safe, everyone. Be well.
Thank you for listening to the I Can't See You podcast. Follow David on Twitter. He is at David Benj.